From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
You can't force yourself to be productive. You have to be in the right mindset to be productive. Mm-hmm. So just acknowledge how we all are as functioning human beings when it comes to work.
I'm Connor Carney, and that's the voice of Andrea Reynolds, founder and CEO of Swoop Funding, an online platform which matches SMEs and startups to funding providers. Andrea started her career in KPMG and later became a corporate finance advisor to smaller businesses in the UK. She started Swoop to take away the pain of raising capital for smaller businesses that don't have the resources to navigate this world on their own. In this conversation, Andrea talks about growing Swoop from 0 to 50 employees in less than 3 years, how she became a non-executive director of Berkshire Hathaway European Insurance, and what it's like to have Warren Buffett as a boss. I started out by asking Andrea to explain what Swoop Funding does and how she got started.
Swoop is a one-stop shop for businesses looking to raise money or save money or both. The idea of Swoop came about because when I left KPMG nearly 2 decades ago now, I started to work with young innovative businesses and started initially looking at it from a corporate finance perspective in terms of raising investment for them. But a lot of them were capital hungry, pre-revenue, so had to dig deeper and find other ways to keep them going and get them funded. So what I started to do was look at grants for them, marrying grants with investment, getting those R&D tax credits done, looking at then where we could raise some loan finance for them once they got revenue generating or were looking for assets, etc. What I realized over this period of time working with businesses was a few things. First of all, the amount of time business owners waste searching and wondering what are they eligible for and what are they not eligible for is the first thing. Secondly, business owners don't start businesses to be accountants or corporate finance advisors. So why does everyone assume that they will understand the complex language, the complex nature of eligibility, etc.? And then thirdly, it was around how dysfunctional the entire funding landscape is for small and medium business owners. Everything is siloed. It's like this black box exists. The biggest complaint you'll ever hear from businesses that are growing is access to finance. And so the natural default position of all business owners is, I'll go to my bank manager, I'll ask for an overdraft, I'll get a credit card, and all of the things. And we're making wrong financial decisions and picking the wrong products simply because it's quicker and easier and you understand them because of your personal experience of these products. So it was years and years of this and repetitive admin and thinking, oh, here I go again, recompiling this data to give to a lender, to give to a brand agency. And the funny part was every company I really wanted to work with, like the really super interesting, innovative ones, could never, ever afford an accountant, let alone a corporate finance advisor. And it was kind of, okay, how do I manage to get these services to those businesses and pretty much democratize the whole area of good corporate financial advice? And I started to think about why do large businesses, why are they the only ones who get serviced correctly? And so that's where the idea came from. It was around how can I bring this market together in a way where it's easy to understand, easy to see what you're eligible for, and actually get you the funding. So that it was from that entire experience that Swoop came about. It was just happened to be that, you know, the world was changing anyway. Cloud accounting was coming along, as you well know, Connor. In addition to that, we have what's known as PSD2 legislation, which was passed in Europe, which essentially means that all of your data that you as a business owner or as a consumer own, so for example, your bank data, you can now share that securely with platforms like Swoop so that you get essentially the best deals and the best products that are on the marketplace. So PSD2 coming in, which is now pretty much known as open banking, essentially, cloud accounting, the ability to integrate with the CRO. What we're essentially doing is saying we're not going to make you as the business owner sit there and slog away at filling in loads of application forms. Just integrate your data sources here. We compile it. We match it against all the eligibility criteria of the entire funding landscape, and then we return the results to you. And while we're at it, if you integrate your bank accounts, we'll start analyzing where are you being overcharged, because that is the other lovely thing about PSD2 and open banking, is there's transparency around fees and charges now. So improve the bottom line. If we improve the bottom line, we improve your affordability for a loan. We improve your attractiveness to an investor or a grant agency. So it's a pretty virtuous cycle, as you would know, because that's what you're doing on an everyday basis, is trying to do the exact same for business owners. And so that's what Swoop is. It's a digital platform where you can see your results, get funded. And we marry that with experts, because we don't need form fillers on the team. We have a small but high quality level of expertise across the different aspects of the financial services market that we marry up, so that you get a person who knows what they're talking about, plus the digital journey too. And that's what we do.
So when someone comes to Swoop, they would probably have an idea that they need funding to grow, and they don't maybe know what type of funding they need. So what happens from when they kind of land at Swoop? Is it that they're plugging in their systems, or do they have an account manager to kind of bring them through that process? Yeah.
If they're nervous about integrating data, if they don't quite know what their answers should be, you know, if they just don't feel like I'm not that comfortable yet in terms of the digital journey, you can automatically get a web chat going. You can automatically click on your calendar and say, call me at this time. So we're really understanding of the fact that no business owner is the same, and some just completely want a digital journey. So if you are that person who doesn't want to talk to a human being and just wants to get your results, you literally put your company name in and we're automatically calling the CRO, gathering all your details so you don't have to worry about what's your company number, address, etc. And we pre-populate everything as we're going along. So gathering all that data, then you can either answer questions so that you don't have to integrate, or you can just simply say, integrate my cloud accounting. And you log in, you give us consent. And so we're calling your cloud accounting software digitally. And then you can give consent where we can pull the management accounts, your debtors list, all the things that the lenders or providers want to see. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go ask your bookkeeper or your accountant to download it, upload it, etc. Yeah. The same thing with bank accounts. Rather than you having to get your PDFs, etc., you can log in online, give us consent. We read that data and put it into a way that the lenders want to see it. And then what we do is marry that up with their eligibility criteria. So then what you get returned are personalized results to your business. So you're not getting, like, you know, the normal comparison sites that you would see, which is, 1,000 quotes for insurance or whatever. This is very much about, you know, these are the things that you are now eligible for based on your financial profile, where you're located, what sector you're in, all of the things that are married up exactly to the eligibility criteria. So that's what the journey is. You see your results and then you can elect to apply. And some of that is automated because lenders have become automated. Some of it is still, lenders aren't automated. Mm-hmm. So we manage your application process through to completion so that you don't have to essentially worry about any of it. We work as your account manager, as effectively your online broker, to ensure you get everything completed. And so that's what the journey is. But as I say, it can be as human led or as digitally led as you wish.
So take me back to when you started it. You were kind of working in corporate finance advisory, and you saw this gap in the market. How did you get from idea, I suppose, to kind of bringing it to where it is today? And what have been the real challenges during that time?
I would say we are probably the best case study of our platform that you will find. So when I'm telling people, oh, these are the products that are you're eligible for. I've walked the walk. I am not presenting something that we haven't done ourselves. And I would say particularly what I learned from operating in both the Irish market and the UK market. So I had clients in both markets. I was kind of navigating the two systems. And I found what the pluses and the minuses were of both countries in terms of being a startup and then being a scale up. And so I married all of that together. And that's what we do on Swoop as well for Irish companies. Mm-hmm. So it's a patchwork. When you start out, especially in a capital hungry business like a tech business, you have to see it as almost a patchwork quilt that you're building of different pockets of funding that exist until you reach that milestone that you're revenue generating or you're in an investable position. Mm-hmm. So what do we do first? We set up our company as a parent company in Ireland and subsidiary and branch in the UK. Mm-hmm. So the nuances of that are, as parent company in Ireland, we won the, I put together a little prototype. And you'll say, well, how did you build your prototype? Well, what I did was I knew two guys who were in Google and I knew that they wanted to build a game. So they wanted to move into gaming, but they didn't understand the funding landscape. So I did a deal with them where I said, if you work 1 week on for me, 1 week off working on your game, I'll work and get you the funding that you need. So I'll apply for all your grants. I'll get you your investor deck, etc. So I did a bit of a barter. So I got those two guys to build my little click-through prototype. And then I used that to apply for the CSF fund. So it's the early stage funding competition that Enterprise Ireland have. Got a no the first time around. And I was like, right, okay. I think we absolutely flunked the video. You have to do this video. Like, why should we pick you? And I'm looking back and I was like, I tried hard. You know, like when you give yourself a script, never give yourself a script on those things. Yeah. So the next time around, I was like, right, I'll just be myself and I'll just say why I think this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. So we got it the second time around, got our first 50,000, which was a huge deal. And I then went to the UK side of it. And with our subsidiary there, I got what's known as a startup loan. So I was marrying the two startup schemes of the two countries. So I managed to get another 50,000 from the startup loan scheme in the UK. So I had 100 grand. Yeah. And then that managed to get me to sort of being able to get from the click-through prototype to the first website. And then once we got to that first website stage, I was able to bring on lenders and equity investors quite fast because I had been in the market. So my plus side of this whole idea was I was what's known as a domain expert. I already knew my customer, I knew my market, etc. My downside was I was not a technologist. And so that's probably the other pain point I'm happy to share with you and your listeners. But that's how I got to that stage. We finished what we were supposed to finish under the competition. And so we went for HPSU funding with Enterprise Ireland. Anyone listening who knows about going for HPSU funding knows that you have to bring in matched funding. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Irish companies really struggle, particularly because the investor market's quite small in Ireland, and it really is, the buyer's market in Ireland. Like, investors can take forever because there's not that many of them. So Irish companies need to know they do not have to confine themselves to the Irish investor market. So what we did was we applied for a HPSU. We did get some Irish angel investors, but we went to the UK. And we used the UK version of EIIS in the, because it's much easier, it's faster, it's more tax efficient for the investors, and the market there is bigger. Mm-hmm. And Irish companies are allowed to do that as long as you have a branch in the UK and the funds flow back to your parent co. So married up, we managed, because when you go to the UK, you say, well, half my round's already committed because you've got Enterprise Ireland money. Mm-hmm. And you go to Enterprise Ireland, you say, oh, I've got my match funding. And so it basically, one helps the other close. Mm. And so that's how we funded the business to that point. And then we won two pretty large grant mm. awards in the UK. We won the Open Banking Challenge in the UK, gave us another $500,000. And then last year we won a rather large one. We won $5 million sterling from Banking Competition Remedies Fund. So we've used grants, investment, loans, the whole gamut. And we're not done yet. We'll be on our next fundraising round in 2021.
So I suppose you were getting the website built, getting the technology built in the background. What were your challenges there? Because obviously you're kind of raising funding on one side, and then on the other side, you're kind of trying to build operations and build the product. Did you find challenges along the way?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I think if anyone who's starting out listening to this, if you think, oh, I just need 100 grand to get to here, double it, treble it, because you make so many mistakes. And it's a given you make mistakes. So everyone does. There's nobody who has a straightforward path to growth or to market product fit. You figure it out as you're going along. You might start with one version of what you think your product is and what the market is for your product. And along the way, you realize, oh, God, this isn't quite what I thought. Mm. Not in a bad way. It can be a good thing. It can be, you just have to sort of tweak to how the market's reacting. And that takes longer, and it takes a lot of mistakes, and it's costly. So that's one thing. That the other thing is, I'm not a tech expert. And I feel that this is probably one of the biggest areas that founders, I try and spread the word as much as possible. I hired, because obviously couldn't afford an in-house team, hired an outsourced agency. And, you know, we got to MVP, everything was fine, but things took longer, more expensive, didn't get what I thought I was getting, etc. And I'm sure you have loads of listeners going, yep, tick box, tick box, tick box. And it's something actually I've spoken to Enterprise Ireland about. It's like, you give us this funding. I pretty much lost the entire 50,000 that you gave me on bad tech decisions, because I had nobody there to say, how you keep a tech outsourced agency on the hook is this, you know? So there's certain things that I have had to learn along the way. So that they know that I know, and that they're not making decisions or trying to send me down a path that might be good for them and not good for me. Mm-hmm. So learning things around demanding sprints from the tech firm that you're using, looking for demos in halfway through that 2-week sprint, having a Jira board that you can see them doing the tasks, Googling and researching and learning. If they're telling you we're going with Microsoft instead of GCP, instead of Amazon, whatever, understand why and what they're telling you. Google it. It's all out there. So I had to learn. I had to learn a lot about tech language, infrastructure, how to manage tech as part of the main part of the business, not being a tech person. And I'd say that's where our biggest weaknesses have been. And overcome, getting more confident on that and overcoming that. Look, it's just pure mayhem. And you just have to live with the fact that it's mayhem and live with the fact that you're constantly feeling like, when will my business be running in this super smooth way with all these fabulous processes and whatever? Well, when you're growing, it's you just have to be comfortable with there's fires going on everywhere. And yes, you're comfortable putting a few out. Some you won't get to. It's just the nature of it all. And so that's the other thing. I come from an accountancy background. I'm a pretty conservative person. So for me, this is like, oh my God. But having to, you know, learn how to do that. And the last thing is the recruiting side of things. The other good old, you know, tick the box. Everybody's got that box where you overhire. You know, you get your funding and you think, oh, I need a CTO. Oh, I need a, no, no, no. You need You need loads of soldiers. You need good soldiers. You need ones who are maybe at the next tier up. The last thing you need at the very beginning are expensive senior hires, mm-hmm. because they're out of the game. They're more on a strategic level. You need people who are going to deliver and execute, because you're in that position, and then you eventually grow out of that and you hire those senior hires. So the overhiring thing, I think there's probably others who would say, yep, that old chestnut as well. So they're the learning so far.
And how big is the team now?
Yeah, there's 53 of us now.
Wow. So 53. That's quite a big journey in itself, going from maybe yourself and one or two other people to jumping to 53 in a reasonably short space of time. Would that be fair?
Very short. Yeah. Yeah. We went pretty fast. Obviously, having won the grant award of 5 million, they didn't give it to us for nothing. They gave it to us to deliver tech and to deliver a service to the UK market. And we're under public commitments in relation to that. So we built the team very fast. This is where we made some key mishires along the way. You know, trying to rush the recruitment process and realizing that is a bad, bad mistake, because it's an expensive mistake, and also the impact on the overall team is longer lasting. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten over that sort of spurt now, and we've learned, and so we're hiring at a slower pace. And we've also opened in Australia. And so it was just getting set up over there, getting good hires over there, getting the tech up and running. So yeah, it's been quite challenging, but wouldn't change it for anything.
That's a mistake, if you could call it that, that pretty much every business makes, you know, at the start. They start to hire people, then they realize, oh, I needed someone, but I took on people too quickly. And I should have really, you know, asked these questions, or I should have really made sure that they were the right fit. Well, it is a mistake, but it's kind of what everyone has to do, and everyone has to kind of learn along the way.
If I was to give any sort of what's worked for us, like where did it go well and where did it not? I think the area where I started to get to was, why am I hiring people with a title? Like, you know, there are so many tasks that need to be done. Why don't I just write down what are the key activities that need to be taken care of? And what kind of person do I need for those activities? Is the first thing. So didn't go, I need a head of sales for whatever. It was more like, okay, this is the kind of person I need. This is what's working when I do it, or when my co-founder does it, et cetera. So we need to find that person. The second thing we discovered was probably the most important part of recruitment was, does the person have an optimistic outlook on life? Truthfully, this has been key, because if you take someone who's from a large corporate and they come into a startup environment can be very, it can be fun, but it can also be very stressful. Mm-hmm. And it won't have all of the structure and resources and all of the things that you might have relied upon in the past. And, you know, if you're someone who gets down pretty quickly, or who can't deal with maybe being thrown a few extra tasks that isn't in your job description, you're not right for a startup environment. So what we learned was, the ones that were really thriving in the business weren't the ones that actually came with the, yes, I match this competency exactly, but they had an open-mindedness and optimism and an energy. You need people who have high energy to come on this journey with you. So our best hires have been those types of personalities. Mm-hmm. And and I think I read a lot of sports psychology, because I think there's a lot of similarities between how you build, how you start a business, how do you get this tribe around you to believe in a vision when, you know, you're bottom of the division, like pretty much, and how do you bring them together to give their best to grow that? And then what do you do when you have ones who come into that environment and maybe throw a little grenade into it because maybe you've had a misfire, or they're just slightly different personalities or whatever? how do you nurture that? So I was reading about the All Blacks, and I was also reading about how the Mercedes Formula One team got the same sports psychologist as the All Blacks. And the key to their recruitment was, do not hire D-heads. I will not say the word on your podcast, but essentially you got to make sure the person is just a humility, humble, down to earth, willing to just take on whatever's required for the team, etc. So I do follow a lot of sports and a lot of sports psychology, because I think even what an entrepreneur has to go through to start up a business and keep it going, I think there are similar traits that we require to be able to sustain this level of energy.
What book or resource stands out most to you in kind of sports psychology or in that realm that you've used in Running Swoop?
Yeah, it's more I read a lot about individuals that I admire, I suppose. So I think Mourinho, the Amazon program on Tottenham was such amazing man management there. Like I really admired that. I follow everyone from Niki Lauda, his entire career to Formula One, because most of the businesses I worked with in the early days were out of McLaren Applied Technologies. So understanding how they stay on that level at all times is pretty unbelievable. But in terms of a book that I would highly recommend to anybody is called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. And it is a phenomenal book. It's the journey of a business that he successfully grew very fast, and then the dot-com boom busted and he had to reduce team, etc. And he talks about the entire journey from both sides in a very human way and in very layman's terms, which I love. So that's my go-to book for anyone who's starting out, because you think it's only happening to you, and it's not. It's universal.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
I think that's maybe the biggest misconception is that you might see a business that's doing exceptionally well, raising loads of money, and they seem to be, they've hired loads of people. But yeah. I think that founder is probably, as worried on a daily basis as,
probably worse. And also, you think, how are they doing so well? How is everything so rosy for those guys? And it's press, it's PR. I mean, no one's going to put out their dirty linen in a press article. Yeah. And so, but when you scratch the surface, even businesses like larger businesses that we work with, because we integrate with some large organizations, I'm shocked by how they're run. And then that gives me hope. Oh my God, scratch the surface of any organization and you will find that it is not as rosy as you think it is. So just keep going on your own and on your own company. And that's all that really matters, I think.
Like, even if you think about something like McDonald's, the most globally recognized business for having, the best systems, and they've kind of figured everything out, you can still kind of order something at McDonald's and get a rude response from someone who's serving you, or, there's so many things that you just can't control and that will never be perfect in the business.
Absolutely. And a lot of our customers on Swoop would be logistics companies, and we're raising finance for them for their vans, etc. And they're all logistics companies for Amazon, and everyone thinks Amazon is the greatest company in the world, that Jeff Bezos is the greatest CEO in the world. And you know what? Yes, absolutely. I mean, you tangible evidence there. Mm-hmm. But when you hear their stories of how the systems are operated, how inefficient they are, you think, really? I thought Amazon was. And so every company has its own fires to put out. So another tip that I would give that I do to anyone starting out also, or actually halfway through their journey or a long way through their journey, is follow companies that you aspire to be, or that you want to benchmark yourself against, and follow their entire journey. What I mean by that is even going on the CRO, getting, when they do a fundraise, what price per share did they get? How long was it before their next raise? What were their revenues when they got to that raise? Things like how many employees did they have? How much revenue were they making per employees? And you, it starts to make it real for you that, oh my God, when that big company that I really aspired to be was my age, this is where they were. And I'm actually outperforming that. So it's a really good way to make yourself feel better sometimes, and also get you focusing on areas that you're not performing in versus, say, where somebody that you aspire to be was at your age. And I remember being at the Business and Finance Awards in Dublin when I was starting out, and Martin Nocton from Glendimplex received an award, and he was kind of giving his 10 things that he's learned during his absolutely brilliant career. And the two that I remember the most was, he said, big companies aren't born big. Glendimplex started as a small electrical company. And so don't feel bad about being a small business and that you can aspire to it. And the second was, always separate your pockets, your personal and your business, and never let the two meet. And again, very key, because in my early days, I would have had the two pockets very much intertwined and learned that lesson to separate them out. So some good tips from some that have gone before us.
Talking about inspirational people in business, I just noticed in my kind of not so deep research that you're a non-executive director of Berkshire Hathaway Insurance Europe. How did that come about? And do you know Warren Buffett?
It's so serendipitous how it came about, but interesting, because one of my most avid reads is all Warren Buffett books. His philosophy on life, full stop. I think it's amazing that somebody so successful as him, if you read his top tips, he talks about unconditional love and empathy, and you know, and it sounds okay coming from this super successful guy. So I'd always followed him, admired him, and just his approach to business is so pragmatic. I love his pragmatism, and so followed him in my career at KPMG. I spent a lot of time in financial services and auditing insurance companies. And that was kind of my background. So it was Guinness Peat Aviation, Ryanair, and insurance companies. That's what I did in KPMG in Dublin. And but hadn't been in insurance for a while, but we have an insurance partner on Swoop with Hiscox, et cetera. Was speaking at an event in Dublin. There was an Australian-Irish innovation trade mission. And I was on a panel at that trade mission. The CEO of Berkshire Hathaway is Australian. Berkshire Hathaway has set up its European headquarters in Ireland in 2019 as a result of Brexit, and are actually growing very fast in the Irish market now and growing the European team there. And so he came up to me afterwards and we started chatting insurance, and I was explaining how what I did with KPMG. I was explaining when I moved to the UK, I was writing insurance directives for the FCA, et cetera. And we just started talking about insurance. And then he called me a week later and said, I want to meet up again. I know we've only met, but I've got something brewing in my head, and et cetera. So we just went through this journey of getting to know each other. I got to know the rest of the management team in the UK and Ireland. And then they eventually offered me the position. And it's been an absolute joy. I tell them it's a real joy, because you get to see how a great company, like a really great, admirable, forever company, if there is such a thing, how they operate. And I take my learning. The thing that they wanted from me, apart from, yes, I had insurance background, was actually the other side. It was the startup mentality. It was the tech side of it. It was the, you know, what's going on in cybersecurity. It was me bringing, a diverse mindset to the table. They didn't just want to be another sort of insurance company filled with insurance people, et cetera. And so I bring that side, and I learn from them in terms of how they do things and how they keep things simple. That I think is probably the key thing I've learned is keep it simple. There is no need for reams and reams of complex jargon. I never hear a jargon word in any of our discussions. So it's been great.
And that is, I think, the thing you notice most when you're, you know, watching an interview or something with Buffett or even Munger. They just cut straight to the chase. It's very simple. You know, we invest in companies in these five ways. And it is no more complicated than that. And, you know, we'll invest in a company. They'll ring us and we'll be able to invest in them the following day if needs be. Yep. You know, there's just very little complication in that process. Yeah.
I remember on the first day of induction, they showed us the slide. So Peter Eastwood is the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway Specialty Insurance. And the slide that he and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett looked at and agreed on this new insurance company. And it was one slide, four boxes with four sentences in it, and that's it. Doesn't have to be any more complex than that. And I think what's also nice to see is how they manage to retain that culture, regardless of how large of a conglomerate Berkshire Hathaway gets. There are red lines, you don't cross them. It's very straightforward. Everybody knows, you know, what the way, how to do things, when to walk away, you know, not to get aggressive on pricing. It's all of these things. And it's so interesting. I think it's because they keep it simple that it's managed to scale across the world. Yeah.
And have you had an opportunity to meet Warren or Charlie?
Yes, but completely unrelated. Totally unrelated. And it was many, many years ago. I don't know whether people would remember, but there was the main guy, the chairman of Coca-Cola, was a guy called Don Keogh, who loved Ireland. Like, oh my God, he loved Ireland. And that's why, obviously, he got Coca-Cola to set up in Ireland. And so he decided, he also sat on the board of Berkshire Hathaway, and he decided he was bringing all of them to Ireland. So he got Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and a lot of other intelligent people from the US to visit Ireland. And it was for a golf event, and it was at the K Club, etc. And I happened to be at that event, and I happened to get lucky and meet both Bill Gates and Warren Buffett at that event. And just the most unassuming individuals, like low-key, unassuming. And I remember Brendan Grace was, you know, doing the commentating or whatever. Yeah. And you know, Brendan Grace and his jokes that come out. And I was just sitting there going, oh my God, do they understand Irish humor? He was really irreverent, didn't care less. And it was actually, the funny part was, Bill Gates had just overtaken Warren Buffett as the richest man in the world that week. And so Brendan Grace was having a field day. It was really something else. But that was an experience I was lucky to have, unrelated, but just nice to be involved in the Berkshire family now. Yeah.
You've gone from, I suppose, 1 to 50 employees. How has your role changed over that time, I suppose? Without putting words in your mouth, you've gone from doing a lot of things yourself to managing to maybe a more strategic role. What's that journey looked like for you?
Yeah, that's another, I'd say, just super interesting part of starting a business and being the CEO of a startup stroke scale up business. Because you start life and you do absolutely everything, right? Everything from the VAT returns through to the hiring, buying the laptops for people who join, through to painting the office. You literally do everything. And then you start to hire people, and it's a real interesting thing where you have to let go and be good at delegating. So supporting the person, trying to entrust them with something while that was something you did. But then time becomes super valuable, and how your role changes. And I think that's been an interesting journey for me to let go of things and to let go of it and say it may not be exactly how I do it, but that's okay. You just need to allow it to grow. And then moving into a more interesting role, which I remember going to my founders forum session in Enterprise Ireland, which I absolutely loved. I would highly recommend the founders forum. We had a brilliant group of people, and it's where you bring CEOs together and you all come with a challenge every sort of like every quarter, or every 2 months, saying, how are you all finding this? It's like therapy for CEOs starting out. And I remember fidgety about, God, am I not working hard enough? Like, I mean, you know, I start my day at 5:30. Like, and I'm like, shouldn't I be busy every single minute? Like, shouldn't I be on the phone? And one of the other CEOs who's a bit further on said, no, you need to spend time reading. Mm-hmm. You need to spend time thinking about where the business is going. After this, you need to be nurturing those where there's, you know, areas that need nurturing, etc. And I remember thinking, really? Okay. And now that is the most fundamental part of what I do. I devour information, and how that has helped our business is just invaluable, because the world's changing so fast in terms of PSD2, open banking, cloud accounting, the expansion of open data frameworks. You really need to stay on top of it. You also need to be thinking of what are your options as the business grows? Like, what is our end game here? Mm-hmm. And so you have to research, what are other companies doing? What's going on? What are their tactics? So I realized that was probably one of the most invaluable things I could do for the business, even though I found it quite awkward at the beginning. I felt like guilty taking the time out to do that kind of work.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. The other part I never, ever, ever enjoyed and still don't enjoy is having to fire someone. And I remember in Founders Forum as well, being coached into, you know, just had the wrong hires. Mm-hmm. And I'd never fired anyone in my life before. And it was just, I was traumatized by how I was going to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't physically see myself getting those words out. And I was thinking, I have to do this because it's bad for the business. It's just bad for the business. And probably bad for the person too, because it's not going to work out and I'm dragging this out. And I remember them all coaching me going, have you set yourself up? Are you going to do it? And then coming back to my next founder's forum going, I did it. And then you realize actually you're doing that person a favor too. And you get into the rhythm of it's just not the right fit or whatever. But those were the things that I found difficult at the beginning in terms of evolving in my role.
Yeah, I think the guilt thing is actually something that other guests have said on the podcast. You know, in order to kind of be the CEO, you can't be doing the low value tasks that you may have started doing because you had to do them. But then it feels like if it's not difficult as such, then maybe I shouldn't be doing it.
Correct. Absolutely. There's certain things that I still retain. I look after, so we've got bank clients and we've got partnerships with insurance companies, etc. So I still look after certain key relationships because strategically they're super important to our business. Mm-hmm. And so they're not things that you let go of easily. So I think as long as you can define what is this contributing to the business, and is it good for us from a strategic perspective, then I'm okay with that now. But yeah, I'm glad to hear others have that guilt factor as well.
Absolutely.
It's a permanent feature.
So how do you carve out that time for reading and doing the kind of non-urgent but important work? How do you schedule your week now to include that?
Yeah. I'm an early starter. I like that early stage of the day where others, where it's not acceptable for others to be emailing you unless they're in Australia or the US or whatever it is. But I start my day with yoga and meditation, so that I'm set up for the day. And then I start actual work at, you know, 6:15, 6:30, something like that. And I use those few hours as really good thinking time. So I don't look at emails. I don't look at anything that involves something on the day-to-day stuff. I do reading, things that might be niggling in the back of my head that I want to know more about. it might be got to do with a conversation or a position I'm trying to take with a potentially new client or something like that. So I use those sort of 3 hours. I managed to get myself to about 9:30, and then that's it. That's done. You're into the mayhem of the day. And then weekends, Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings, I love that time as well for that. Mm. And then during the week, I'll sprinkle time in my diary where I blocked it out and it says researching this or strategic time or whatever. Mm. Because as soon as you leave anything free in your diary, it's somebody fills it with something. And so I've become more disciplined on that front as well. But things do interrupt that flow. So I do find try and do it when the rest of the world's not looking for an answer to an email.
Do you use an app or anything for the yoga and meditation, or do you follow YouTube? Yeah. Or what do you do for that?
Yeah, so I learned self-practice a number of years ago, but I have, and actually everyone in our organization has their own choice of whichever meditation app they want. So I use Breathe. A lot of the team use Calm. It's not just even about well-being, but even if you're the most cynical person. So I've worked with loads of engineers in Formula One and whatever, like they're the most sort of like cynical, like entrenched people. And you see companies like McLaren and Mercedes and all these, and they implement meditation as part of the working day. And they do it because they know it's better for not just the individual, but actually better for performance and productivity and mental health. But it's all interlinked. So yeah, so we have, and then we have another great Irish company called Buafit. Dave Stapleton has started this amazing company. And so we subscribe to that. And so every Tuesday mornings and Thursday mornings, the team, Thursdays are yoga, online yoga, and then Tuesdays are more the HIIT classes and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's how we keep it going. And then
yeah, but it's incredibly important, isn't it? Just the general kind of well-being and everyone. And so like if you can, in the high stress environment, if you can bring that down so people can manage themselves a little bit better, it's a huge help.
Like if it works for, the way I looked at it was I've been practicing many years, and I think, well, if it works for me, then, you know, sometimes you need, like I say to the team as well, like if you're on a bit of a daydream, take the time out to have the daydream. Like don't be there going, oh, I better have a cup of coffee to try and stop myself daydreaming. You're better off just switching off for those 5-10 minutes, have a daydream, switch it up a bit, and then come back to your work, because you can't force yourself to be productive. You have to be in the right mindset to be productive. So just acknowledge how we all are as functioning human beings when it comes to work.
So Andrea, what are your goals in the near and distant future for Swoop, and where would you like to be in kind of, you know, 5 to 10 years time?
We're going international. My absolute vision, my dream for all of this is that we get to a place where globally a business owner can access finance and the right products regardless of where they are. Like you should not be disadvantaged. I always say this, I don't care if you're in Barcelona or Bally James Duff, if you are a good company, you should be entitled to the same access to funding across the world. So finance is becoming borderless. So where for example, there's an invoice finance provider in Barcelona who is now financing some of our businesses in Ireland and the UK. Some of them are trading in Uganda, and they're financing those invoices in Uganda. So with data and with digitization, I feel like we can really unlock the potential of small and medium businesses and empower them. And we need to, because all of our economies rely on small and medium businesses. So my dream is that we will have a global Swoop, which is, you know, sharing data in a secure way, digitizing these processes. So any business, I want SME finance to be flowing freely, digitized. I want data to be used to the power of small businesses rather than to the detriment of small businesses. And for us as a company, I have huge aspirations. I want us to be one of those recognized brands in our space. No need to be selling to anyone early or anything like that. I feel like nobody understands this mission like I do. And until it's at a place where I know we've managed to achieve that, then I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
Where can people find out more about you, find out more about Swoop Funding and so on?
Swoopfunding.com. swoopfunding.ie. That's where you can find us, and you can find me on LinkedIn at Andrea Reynolds on LinkedIn as well. So yeah, anything anyone wants to follow up on, if they're a young business starting out or an older business wanting to get to the next stage or trying to survive COVID, that's what we're here for.
Andrea Reynolds, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Super, thanks for having me, Connor.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.